Nishmini.
I will tell you, Director Deutsch, as a former Los Angeles police narcotics detective, that the agency has dealt drugs throughout this country for a long time.
Don't give me the conspiracy bullshit. Come on. You're a more intelligent man than that.
What?
Come on.
Drogerija, oddaja o vojni proti drogam, reguliranih zdravilih, ljudeh in družbah, ki uživajo te ali one psihoaktivne snovi. Drogerija, vsako drugo nedeljo opoldne na Radiu Študent.
Drage poslušalke, cenjeni poslušalci, poslušate Drogerijo, začenjamo pa jo z prvim večjim presenečenjem. Včeraj je namreč predsednik Gvatemale Otto Pérez Molina, ki je nastopil svoje predsednikovanje pred slabim mesecem, izjavil, da se bo na naslednjem sestanku južnoameriških voditeljev posvetoval o temu, da bi legalizirali prekupčevanje drog po transverzalah, ki potujejo od juga proti severu v Združene države Amerike, torej da bi se tako dekriminaliziral kot prekupčevanje z drogami, kot droge same. Seveda je to presenečenje, saj je še 3 tedne nazaj, kar smo omenili v prejšnji drogeriji, trdil, da bo tudi sam podobno kot njegov kolega iz Mehike in kolega iz Kolumbije, posvojil plan, ki ga narekuje Amerika, plan Kolumbija, mehiški plan inicijativa Merida in na tak način boril boj proti kartelom, vendar pa je včerajšnji izjavi za nacionalni radio odgovoril, da so vsi te plani zgolj neutralizirali velike kartele, niso pa prekinili prekupčevanja. Mi pa se posvetimo malo bolj lahkotnejšim temam, recimo v Kaliforniji. Tam so se seveda razvile mnogovrstne dejavnosti v boju proti drogam. Najnovejša je pa nek servis, ki se ga lahko poslužujejo paranoični starši, ki želijo vedeti, ali njihovi otroci uživajo te ali one prepovedane droge. Lahko grejo do najbližjega drug dog servisa, teh je zdaj že 3, so v Kaliforniji, te pa ponujajo pse, najameš ga za $100, pripeljajo ga na vaš dom, ta pa ponjuha vse kote in izvohlja, če vaš otrok uživa to ali ono drogo. Več nadzora pa si želijo tudi v Londonu. Župan Boris Johnson je po želji, da bi se zmanjšala kriminaliteta v tem mestu in petina nasilnih incidentov naj bi se dogajala v bližini nočnih klubov ali v nočnih klubih samih, ker polovica nasilnih kaznivih dejanj pa naj bi zagrešili posamezniki pod vplivom alkohola. Zaradi tega je upravil javno anketo in ugotovil, da 60% Londončanov pritrjuje ideji, da bi se tiste nepridiprave, ki so bili zaprti zaradi kaznivih dejanj, ki so jih storili pod vplivom alkohola in ko so ti odslužili kazen, naj bi se le tem dodale neke elektronske zapestnice, ki bi jih seveda morali nositi. Te elektronske zapestnice pa bi merile perspiracijo na vsake 30 minut kože in ugotavljale na ta način, ali je posameznik zaužil kako alkoholno pijačo ali ne. In v primeru, da jo je, bi tako javila na najbližjo policijsko postajo in policaji bi seveda izsledili alkoholiziranega posameznika in ga potem ponovno zaprli. Kot pravi sam Boris Johnson, naj bi se že dogovarjal z vlado Camerona, da bi zakonodajo, ki seveda tega sedaj ne omogoča, spremenili, da bi v najhitrejšem času postala ta norma pravilo. Torej, tisti, ki so bili zaprti zaradi alkohola, tega več ne bodo mogli piti. Vse to si je pa Boris Johnson oziroma njegovi sodelavci so se naučili od vzora iz Južne Dakote, kjer to počnejo že slabih 10 let. Pravijo, da imajo kar nekaj uspehov, statistika kriminalnih dejanj naj bi se znižala, medtem pa Južno Dakoto, sicer eno revnejših držav, Združenih držav Amerike, prevevajo mnogoteri drugi problemi in predvsem v rezervatih, rezervati Združenih držav Amerike ne preslikavajo siceršnjega življenja tam, povprečna starost naj bi se gibala tam nekje med 42 in 45 leti na rezervatih in pleme oglala Sjujov v Južni Dakoti, v rezervatu, kjer je konzumpcija, prodaja alkohola prepovedana, se je odločila zaradi problemov z alkoholom med njihovimi prebivalci, ma bo tožila 5 največjih proizvajalcev piva v Ameriki, zaradi tega, ker pač naj bi te zalagali mesta, ki obkrožajo tale njihov rezervat z pivi. In če v enem mestu živi manj kot 100 ljudi, tam pa naj bi prodali več kot 5 milijonov pločevink piva v enem letu, je to za njih zadosten razlog, da pač tudi pivovarne niso tukaj povsem nedolžen faktor, kljub temu, da seveda je odločitev vsakega posameznika in zaradi tega so se odločili, da bodo tožili teh pet največjih pivovarnarjev za 500 milijonov dolarjev in ta sredstva naj bi namenili zdravstvenim inštitucijam in podobno. Zdaj se pa še posvetimo Severni Koreji. Severna Koreja, o njej le redko kdaj v drogeriji, vendar pa so v zadnjem času začele prihajati novice, da naj bi tudi tam imeli tako probleme z alkoholom, kot tudi nekateri opozarjajo, da naj bi se tam proizvajale večje količine metamfetamina in potem prodajale naj si bo v Južno Korejo ali drugam. Kitajska agencija je že pred slabimi 10 leti poročala, da naj bi na meji med Severno Korejo in Kitajsko zasegli manjše količine metamfetamina, pa takrat uradna kitajska policija zadolžena za narkotike, za droge, trdila, da je to nepomemben element, da prihaja jo veliko večje količine drog iz drugih koncev, ki obkrožajo Kitajsko. Vendar pa so v poleti na kitajski državni agenciji enkrat junija zabeležili, da naj bi v Dandongu, v mestu Kemiji na Severno Korejo, razbil eno večjih prekupčevalskih naves. Po nekaterih uradnih poročanjih kitajskih agencij naj bi zasegali kar za cirka 60 milijonov vredne količine metamfetamina. Medtem pa so v prejšnjem tednu v Južni Koreji začeli večkrat omenjati v večjih medijih, da naj bi Bingdu, njihov izraz za metamfetamin, imel velike razsežnosti v Severni Koreji, ker tam nekje med četrt in polovico prebivalcev naj bi ga uživalo. Zakaj je tako visoka statistika? Pa je zaradi tega, ker primankuje zdravil v Severni Koreji in ker teh ni, se pač ljudje poslužujejo tistega, kar je na okolje in naj bi bilo tega Bingduja metamfetamina na pretek in tako se z njim ne zadeva zgolj mladina, ampak tudi starejši, ki imajo tak ali pa drugačen zdravstveni problem. Predstavnik največje vladajoče južnokorejske stranke pa trdi, da pisarna številka 39, to je entiteta znotraj stranke delavcev Severne Koreje, ki naj bi skrbela za Kimov sef, za očeta zdajšnjega vladajočega Kim Jong-una, Kim Jong-ila, to naj bi bila neka črna skrinjica, ki naj bi servisirala vladajočo družino. Je na črni listi kar nekaj držav Zahoda, kot ena od uradnih entitet znotraj Severne Koreje. In ta predstavnik južnokorejske stranke trdi, da je ta pisarna zadolžena za to, da se prekupčuje z metamfetaminom, da se tega v Severni Koreji proizvaja in na to prek Kitajske transportira tudi v Južno Korejo in drugod. Južna Koreja naj bi kar polovico metamfetamina dobila iz Severne Koreje. Tok o novicah iz sveta. Po krajšem glasbenem pretahu pa se bomo posvetili Ritalinu oziroma bolezni, ki naj bi ozdravilo to zdravilo, stanju duha, problemom s pozornostjo in hiperaktivnostjo otrok. Pogovarjali se bomo z dr. Alanom Sufrijem.
A nije li vama čudno da ovoj zemlji se ne može obaviti istraga u takvom slučaju gdje praktički se van izašao?
Nema pravila, dobrodošli na igre bez granica. U predivni svijet nedovršenih sudskih parnica. Zabava nije zabava bez ubojstava i otmica. Pogotovo kad se zlobnicima nazad vrati loptica. Riječi ne vrijede kad se ne ispune obećanja. Jer dužni smo sve više, zarada je sve manja. Ne sjećam se života bez kriminala i afera. Bez korupcije sistema, bez moralnih dezertera. Marketinških trikova i medijskog zaluđivanja. Bez meča pod tepihom i javnih prozivanja. A danas mi mali umiremo od posljedica stresa. I oni što su obećali rade u sukobu interesa. Gledam u lica, vidim samo profitere. U očima Lucifera kako prljav novac pere. Uz lažne prijatelje za njih nema problema. Jer ljudi opet spavaju dok se novo sranje sprema. Lopovluk, laži, obrazi ko Johnovi, sranje. Krive face, krivi uzori. Jeste umorni, bauljate li turobni i surovi. Da li vas napadaju tumori? A ne mora bi tako. 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 Kada gledam vas, nekad davno vidim sebe. Sve je to isto, samo neko drugo vrijeme. Zašto moram biti agresivan, glup i bahat? Morate progledat jer će oni opet sjebat. Uzimaju, jebe im se, jesi gladan i ubog. Otvaraju radna mjesta, al za nekog drugog. I opet slušam, bit će ovo zemlja blagostanja. Naslušao sam se lopova i praznih obećanja. Gluhi ste i tupi, prihvaćate bez razmišljanja. Mislim da ste glupi, bez okolišanja. Ajmo iz početka, ovo provjera je znanja. Zato draga djeco, evo obećanja. Radit ćete ko crnci, sjedat će minimalci. U mirovini ćete biti samo siromašni starci. Tako cijeli život, mučit će vas novci. I mnogi pojedinci, vaši klinci, slabi živci. I kuća i posao, loše zdravlje, glupi ljudi. I sto drugih stvari od kojih se poludi. Zato hrabri misle i na kraju slobodni su. Jer istina oslobađa, dok sve ostalo su. Lopovluk, laži, obrazi ko Johnovi, sranje. Krive face, krivi uzor.
sponzori. Jeste umorni, pa umljate li turobni i surovi? Da vas napadaju tumori? A ne mora bi tako. A ne mora bi tako. A ne mora bi tako. A ne mora bi tako.
Drage poslušalke, cenjeni poslušalci, poslušate Drugarijo na valovih Radio Študent. Mi pa nadaljujemo z pogovorom z dr. Alanom Sufrom. Alan Sufr se je nedavno upokojil, sicer pa je bil profesor skozi desetletja, raziskovalec, ki se je ukvarjal predvsem z problemi pozornosti pri otrokih. Začel je v 60-ih letih, takrat se je ta ADD, Attention Deficit Disorder, torej to, ta problem pomankanja pozornosti, imenoval minimalna možganska disfunkcija. In na tem področju je ustvaril mnoge psihofiziološke študije, no nekaj jih je naredil, prva od njegovih je bila tudi ena od tistih, ki je potem služila potrditvi, da snov, kakršna je ritalin, torej amfetaminska droga, pomaga pri otrocih, ki imajo pomankanje pozornosti. No, to se je dogajalo v 60-ih, v 70-ih, 80-ih, potem se je začel tudi ukvarjati z čustvenim razvojem otrok, naredil eno večjih longitudinalnih študij, torej študija, ki sledi posameznikom skozi njihov razvoj, od časa, ko je mati šele noseča, pa vse do danes, ko so ti posamezniki stari 36 let. In predvsem skozi delo na teh področjih je ugotovil, da tisto njegovo prvotno mišljenje in vera, ki je še danes nekako ustaljena, torej da imajo otroci, ki imajo probleme s pozornostjo, ki so hiperaktivni, neko prirojeno napako v možganih, da je seveda nekaj narobe z njimi in da jim je potrebno dajati drogo, psihoaktivno drogo že pri mladih letih. V Ameriki je to dovoljeno že pri 3 letih, tam je približno tudi 3 milijone otrok, ki uživajo to substanco, uživajo pa še marsikdo drug, predvsem recimo da študente, ki se želijo, ambiciozni študente, ki se želijo svoje izpite upravljati čim bolj, čim bolje in zaradi tega recimo tudi Amerika, njene agencije vsako leto dajo ven kvote, koliko teh zdravil se lahko proizvede, koliko se jih lahko da na tržne police in zaradi tega tudi recimo v decembru bila panika zaradi pomankanja, ne, ker je seveda več študentov pač nakupili to, kakor pa otrok z temi dotičnimi problemi. No in seveda zdaj novo leto, nova kvota, zdravila so spet na policah. Ampak mi pa se bomo zaradi tega, ker se je Alan Sufr tudi upokojil, ker je eden izmed tistih, ki je bil prisoten pri delu z otroci in razvoju znanosti, ki naj bi pomagala tem otrokom, ki imajo te probleme, smo seveda ga poklicali in vprašali za mnenje, za njegove uvide v to tako zvano bolezen in začnemo kar z pač njegovim sam dvomi, kot rečeno, da naj bi bil ta stvar prirojena otroku, ampak kaj naj bi bile opcije te biofizične podlage temu sicer mentalnemu, duševnemu stanju?
Well, two things are possible. One, it's possible that many children called ADD were born with some inherent compromise to their biology, or it's possible that a subgroup of them was born that way. But in neither case do we have evidence to support that. There's a very robust literature now. It began with animal studies showing that experience massively shaped brain development. And more recently, those studies have been expanded to humans. There's a very new report that shows, for example, that early nurturing, nurturant parenting, directly observed, leads to a larger hippocampal growth in children. That's a very new study. There have been previous studies showing that nurturant parenting of children leads to better established amygdala function. So there's a lot of converging evidence that indeed the developing brain is shaped by experience. None of that, of course, proves that there aren't some children born with brain defects. But it's a tricky point, but the studies that are done with ADD and brain are all contemporaneous studies. They're all studies done after the children already have been diagnosed with ADD. And they find that these children often show brain patterns different from other children. But if once you understand that brain development can be shaped by experience, of course their brains would be different, whether they were born with a defect or they encountered a stressful, traumatic, and non-nurturing early childhood. Just as ADD may develop from experience, so might the brain variation.
No, dr. Sufre je tukaj povedal, da seveda lahko obstaja možnost, da je to prirojeno stanje, možganska napaka, recimo temu tako, vendar da za to ne obstajajo nobeni dokazi. Obstaja pa neko znanje, ki se je razvijalo v zadnjem desetletju dveh, da se možgani lahko oblikujejo glede na izkušnjo, torej glede na okolico, na to, kaj se mu dogaja, kaj se sooča. In pač to pomeni, da lahko nekdo razvije, če tudi nima neke prirojene napake, lahko razvije to kasneje v svojem otroštvu in pa tudi, da se to lahko gre za neko plastičnost, kar pomeni, da se do neke mere naj bi ta stvar dala tudi spremeniti v neko drugo podobo. Je pa še potrebno tu omeniti en paradoks, ki je preveval predvsem to strujo psihologov in psihiatrov, ki so govorili, da gre za neko prirejeno napako otrok. In ta paradoks, zakaj naj bi otroci, ki imajo težave s pozornostjo, potem, ki so pojedli neko stimulativno snov, bili sposobni sedeti za mizo in reševati recimo da dolgočasne matematične ali pa kakšne druge naloge, takrat so in še vedno danes nekateri razlagajo to, ko češ, zaradi na njih ne delujejo normalno stimulativne droge, prav zato, ker imajo neko napako v možganih. Seveda pa ta struja znanstvenikov, recimo, da ne ve, kaj so počeli tisti, ki so delovali z vojaki, ki so servirali vojsko in ki seveda vejo, kakšne so značilnosti stimulativnih drog. To pomeni, da če se nekje veseli, se bo še veda toliko bolj s toliko večjim žarom veselilo. Če se pa opravlja kakšne naloge, pa pomeni kakšne dolgočasne, repetitivne naloge, pomeni, da bo pač stimulativna droga tistega posameznika zanimirala do te mere, da bo lahko seveda sedel pri miru in se posvetil, fokusiral neki snovi, ki ga sicer naj ne bi zanimala. Tako da tukaj ne gre za noben paradoks, ampak tudi za neko napačno dojemanje, delovanje te snovi strani tiste stroke. Zdaj pa nadaljujemo z dr. Sufrom in pa razlikami med kratkoročnimi študijami, dolgoročnimi študijami in pa rezultati, ki so jih te študije pokazale v primeru seveda otrok, ki so uživali Ritalin ali nemo podobne snovi, Adderall recimo.
When I was studying ADD myself at the beginning, I began reviewing the literature and I noticed that just like the study I had done, all of the studies that were being published only lasted maybe 4 or 6 or at the most 8 weeks. And that left open the question of, well, would these results persist if you followed the children longer, or do the children adapt to the drugs? Do they develop tolerance? In the early days, I was able to find a few studies that lasted a little longer. One study lasted 15 months, and it found no benefit. So I became very interested in that question and continued to review the research. In 1990, I wrote another review. By that time, there were a few more long-term studies. None of them found any beneficial effects. But none of those studies were actually experiments where children were randomly assigned to medication. Then more recently, the NIMH funded a large-scale study called the MTA study. And the major results from that study were published between 2007 and 2009. And even that study, with random assignment to group, failed to find any evidence that stimulant medications benefited the children in the long term.
Kaj pa meni Sufra o kombinirani terapiji, torej da bi se posameznika tako mu nudilo neko širšo pomoč, kot tudi da bi se mu nudilo neko substanco, drogo za en krajši čas, zgolj zato, da bi ga mu omogočila neko pogled v to drugo stanje, v katerega naj bi se slejko prej premaknil.
That was a very widely endorsed hypothesis. It made a lot of sense to me personally. Unfortunately, once again, there is no evidence. There is evidence that short-term, the combination of medication and therapy is more effective than therapy alone or medication alone, but that's short-term. This long-term MTA study had a group of children who received cognitive behavior therapy by itself, medication by itself, cognitive behavior therapy plus medication, and a control group. At first, in the early weeks and months of that study, they found that medication plus therapy was the best. But when they did their follow-up 2 years later and 3 years later, medication did not show any effect by itself, nor did it show any enhanced effect on the behavior therapy. And in fact, behavior therapy alone was associated with a reduction in substance abuse by these children. But medication alone was not.
Mm-hmm.
But let me say that I still think, of course, if you're going to use medication as part of your treatment, you don't want to use medication alone. You want it as part of a broader program. And I know many physicians that view it that way. Mm-hmm. So it remains a possible idea, but currently there isn't a lot of research for that either. The idea that maybe we give the kid medication and it makes him better able to take advantage of our treatment, then we can withdraw the medication and continue the other treatment, that remains an interesting idea, and I wish there was more work done on that.
No, zdaj se je tale naš dr. Sufre, ko je šel v penzijo, tudi posvetil malo bolj še aktivnemu razlaganju o problemih tudi v javnih medijih in seveda se je zgrnilo na njega kar nekaj jeznih mater, češ da postavlja to znanstveno raziskovanje na tem področju nazaj v 19. stoletje, ko češ, zdaj smo pa vse me krive, ker nismo pravilno vzgajali otrok, seveda to ni bil njegov namen, pa poslušamo še malo več o tem od gospoda Sufra.
The things that we found in our study beginning at birth that predicted ADD, especially in the very early years of life, we found high stress in the family, lack of social support in the family, and these particular patterns of care, there is a scale that is very well developed that one uses from direct behavioral observation. You observe the baby for many hours in the home. We went on three separate occasions and observed the babies and filmed them with their mothers. And then you make a rating of how smoothly does the mother adjust her behavior to fit to the baby, what the baby's open to. So if the baby is ready to play with something, you play with them then. If they're not ready, you wait until they are ready. If you're talking to the baby and playing with it and it turns its head away, you take that as a sign it needs me to slow down for a minute, and you slow down. That's what's called cooperative care. And the opposite of that is called interfering or intrusive care. And that was something we measured, and as early as age 6 months of life, it predicted ADD. Now, let me hasten to say, I was very upset myself that in the editor's shortening of my article, they did not allow the words to be said that I, in fact, do not blame parents. Because in our study, for example, we found, first of all, every family we studied was trying to do the very best for their child that they could. Every parent that we studied was cared about their children. I never saw a parent that didn't. Secondly, we tracked the stress of the families at each age. And what we found was, as the stress in the family went down, so did the behavior problems of the child. As the stress went up, so did the behavior problems of the child. So once you understand how the context that the family is operating in influences them, you would never blame the parents. What I would tend to blame, if I had to give an overall criticism, it would be the amount of stress and pressure in our current society, how much pressure families are under, how much general stimulation there is that children are exposed to. Also, I want to say, I personally got 450 emails myself, and most parents were quite positive about what I had to say. The New York Times, of course, felt obligated to publish some of the negative comments, but the vast majority of parents were positive and did not see me as blaming them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's one more excellent point that you also make, that is understanding the causes of this state of mind and where the money for research is allocated. It is allocated mostly in the establishing new medicines, but very little in the changing and making new insights about the very conditions that, as you said, derail the development of these children in the first place.
Yes. That's a kind of statement that only someone like myself, who's retired and does not need to get any funding from NIMH, would probably dare to make right now. But I'm very critical of our National Institute of Mental Health because it has as its priority number one disorder. If you propose a study to them, you have to be studying a disorder, not the conditions that promote health, but disorder. And number two, you need to be investigating biological markers, genes, cortisol. They're very narrow now in what their focus is, and I think that's quite unfortunate.
Kot rečeno, vse se pretaka, vse je zaradi denarja.
Where is the money coming behind this movement? Like the person that wrote the article, was he funded by a drug company? Are the psychiatrists being courted by American pharmaceutical companies? Because you see, we have pretty much saturated the market here. So I'm sure they'll look to expand. It's billions of dollars in profits. That's a hard thing to fight against.
Torej, drage mame, dragi očetje, če imajo vaši otroci kakšne probleme s pozornostjo, s hiperaktivnostjo, ne nasedajte farmacevtom, ne kupujte zdravil, ampak se na kak drugačen način, bolj človeški, pokvarite svojim otrokom in mu skušajte pomagati, lahko seveda tudi strokovno pomočjo, vsekakor pa ni zaželjena s pomočjo pomoč z psihoaktivnimi snovmi, ki so prepovedane za uživanje starejšim polnoletnim osebam, medtem pa jih zlahka dodeljujejo mladoletnikom. V nadaljevanju oddaje bomo poklicali še J.P. Omna v Belgijo. V Evropi se je na ravni Evropske unije vzpostavil klub, naj bi bil podoben temnem cannabis klubom, ki imajo sicer določeno zakonodajno podlago za prodajo teh rastlin konoplje oziroma vršičkov konoplje, ganže. To se dogaja v Španiji, v Belgiji, večkrat smo že to omenjali v naši oddaji. Nekaj podobnega pa se naj bi sedaj zgodilo tudi z kokinimi listki, torej ne za kokainom, ampak za samo rastlino. To naj bi kupovali od organskih proizvajalcev v Južni Ameriki in ga potem prodajali tudi v Evropo. Več o temu pa nam bo povedal Jop. Jop, hello, do we hear each other?
Yes, I hear you. Good morning.
Good morning, Jop. How are you doing?
Fine. I hope you too and your listeners too.
Yeah, of course. I think we're all fine. It's snowing down here. It's nice weather. People are probably warm at home. Jop, please tell me there is some good news coming from Incode, and that is that you are trying to find out ways and to start selling coca leaves in Europe.
Well, what is going on is that we have set up a new social club. Mm-hmm. We were, of course, already working with the cannabis social clubs, but mm-hmm. now we have got a new project going on, which is called the Coca Leaf Social Club, mm-hmm. which means that we invite all people living in Europe who would like to consume coca leaves in a traditional way, that is by chewing or by making tea or other ways also where you use the entire coca leaf, so you do not elaborate it into finished products like cocaine, you just use it in a traditional way. We offer these people the opportunity to buy coca leaves directly from coca leaf producers in South America. So we connect people in Europe, consumers, with producers in South America who work organically. We expect from them that they only grow in an organic way, so the coca leaves are completely healthy, not treated with any chemical product. And we develop this relationship together with the coca producer organizations, the organizations of coca farmers, and we negotiate together the way we do this. So we call it also a fair trade. It's a fair trade, organic coca leaf that people are able to buy. They have to become member of our association that costs 25 euros a year. And from that moment on, they can order to a maximum of 150 grams of coca leaves every week. This will be sent from South America directly to them. And if they have any problem with the customs, if the customs of your country stop this order, stop the sending, we will assist you with legal documents elaborated by experts in the issue lawyers that are expert in international drug legislation who will help us to maintain that the prohibition of coca leaf is an act of racism, that there is no scientific basis for that, and therefore that to buy coca leaves directly from South American producers where they are produced legally and where they also are sold legally in Bolivia and Peru, that this is this cannot be considered as a crime.
Mm-hmm. Because for instance, these cannabis social clubs, they already have this legislative backing so that in some states in European Union you can be a member of this and they can work freely, well, almost freely. There are some problems, but for instance, in Spain or Belgium. But for this social club that you've come up now, there is not as yet on legal backing, but you are talking about the four conventions, declarations of the UN on human rights, and this could be a backing for customers here in Europe.
Yes, we think we have found in the European conventions on human rights, in the UN conventions on human rights, we have found enough basis to say that one has the right to practice his own culture. If you like reggae music, it doesn't mean that you have to be a Rastafari or a Jamaican. You can also like reggae music when you live in Europe. You can also like coca leaves when you live in Europe. That the cultures travel, so the right to practice your own culture should also be allowed to people who want to practice the coca leaf culture in Europe. And we think there is no scientific basis to say coca leaves are legal in Bolivia and Peru and not legal anywhere else, because you cannot say that they can be healthy in Bolivia and Peru. They produce no negative health effects in Bolivia and Peru, and they would produce it when they would take it in Europe. This is nonsense. This cannot be maintained in front of a court. So we are hopeful that there will be enough people who take this choice. We stand together, we have the legal expertise behind us, and we will take the fight. We will have to take the battle to the court and find judges that understand this and that are brave enough to say, yes, you are right, this international prohibition of coca leaves is nonsense. We have to take it away.
Yup, thank you very much, and of course I wish you all the best. And where can our listeners, if they wish to become members of this social club, do so? Did they just go on your encode.org page?
Yes, just go to the encode.org page. It's a bit difficult to find, maybe for the people who find in English, but they can always send a mail to office@encode.org and they will get immediately response, or phone me in Belgium and I will explain them everything.
All right, yeah, thank you very much again, and of course the best of luck, and see you soon.
And to you too, and very good, very best of luck with your program, and good luck and good vibrations to everybody in Slovenia.
All right, thank you, bye-bye. Yep.
Bye-bye.
Drage poslušalke, cenjeni poslušalci, danes ste poslušali Drugarijo, ponovno se slišimo čez dva tedna. Z vami sem bil Matej, tehniciral je Rok, srečno.
Nišbini.
I will tell you, Director Deutsch, as a former Los Angeles police narcotics detective, that the agency has dealt drugs throughout this country for a long time.
Don't give me the conspiracy bullshit. Come on. You're a more intelligent man than that. Well, come on.
Drogerija, oddaja o vojni proti drogam, reguliranih zdravilih, ljudeh in družbah, ki uživajo te ali one psihoaktivne snovi. Drogerija, vsako drugo nedeljo opoldne na Radiu Študent.